Blog Talk Radio.
It is better to die for an idea that will live than to live for an idea that will die.
Steve Biko was laid to rest in his simplistic fashions, his coffin carried by donkey cart, in September 1977. His funeral was attended by 20,000 people, including diplomats from 13 countries, his close friend Donald Woods, and members of opposition parties. More could have packed in had security police not set up a cordon around the town. Biko's short life of just 31 years was packed with political activism. There had been deaths in detention before, but the country and world were shocked that someone with a statue of Biko could have died in this fashion. He'd been returning from a trip to Cape Town when he was arrested outside King Williamstown. His banning order had confined him to the town. The apartheid government viewed him as a threat, as he had been involved in NUSAS as a student, SERSO, the Black People's Convention, and the organization most identified with him, the Black Consciousness Movement.
Consciousness is an attitude of the mind and a way of life. The most positive call to emanate from the Black world for a long time. Its essence is the realization by the Black men of the need to rally together with his brothers around the cause of their oppression, the Blackness of their skin, and to operate as a group to rid themselves of the shackles that bind them to perpetuate servitude.
His message of Black pride resonated with both South Africa's oppressed and others worldwide. But state brutality grew alongside this message. Biko was taken to Warma Police Station in Port Elizabeth and then to the notorious security police offices in the Sanlam building. The PE police were apparently determined not to show Biko the respect they believe he enjoyed from King Williamstown Police. Despite an inquest and later testimony by officers at the TRC, there's never been clarity on what happened on the night of September the 6th. Biko was examined by doctors. One said he was shamming. Another recommended he receive medical treatment, but later allowed him to be transferred to Pretoria, naked and manacled in the back of a van. The official version of his death was that he had died of hunger. His death on this day, leaving the then Minister of Police, Jimmy Kruger, to say, it left him cold.
I'm going to be me as I am, and you can beat me or jail me or even kill me, but I'm not going to be what you want me to be.
Get up for your right.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment. My name is Henry, also known as Dr. Filet. We thank you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Needless to say, we open up with a brief kind of story overview of the great Stephen Biko. September 12th will mark the anniversary or the commemoration of his assassination or his actual death. We find it very interesting, the life, the legacy of Stephen Biko. And so one of our projects is literally named the B.B. Biko, because the energy, the spirit of Stephen Biko is one that we want to make sure that we continue to embrace and point some very clear things out, and that is Stephen Bantu Biko, of course, was born in Azania, also known as South Africa. But for him to name his movement and a lot of his work, Black Consciousness. And so as we proceed in tonight's program and leading up to September 12th, we're going to raise some questions as to why we think Stephen Biko felt the need to focus on black consciousness. What did that mean? Why did he not call it African consciousness or South African consciousness or something else? Why black consciousness? And so today we notice some use that word or that terminology, and oftentimes it gets a bit misconstrued or jaded or what have you. But when we talk about black consciousness, we do so, again, in the spirit of Stephen Biko and others like him. So, again, family, when you hear me use the phrase, please always know I'm not talking about it in the context of what other people might be talking about, unless they're talking about responsibility or responsible actions, unless they're talking about real progressive moving and movement and sacrificing and things of that nature if necessary. This is what we're talking about. This is what Stephen Biko was talking about and died for. And so we don't play with that terminology. We don't play with the history and work of our people. We strive to uphold it and embrace it and so forth and so on. At any rate, we'll talk more about Stephen Biko as we proceed in tonight's program, because this program is, in fact, dedicated to him and others. As we move forward in the month of September, we're going to also give you a special report on two other new ancestors, excuse me, and that is, of course, Sister Ava Muhammad and Prince ICL. And again, I put something incorrect. I put ICL Al-Amin, and his name was actually Prince ICL Ibn Israel. So we're going to change that very shortly. The other thing, family, that we wanted to mention to everyone, that's playing my throat there, is that we want to talk more about also the disrespect and the disregard of our ancestors and the freedom fighters of today, our sheroes and heroes. And so coming up first for tonight on the live line is going to be Brother Shep, who is one of the original Black Panthers and also a member of the Zulu Nation and a whole bunch of other things. And we're going to hear from him a situation that has occurred in New York in regards to the African American parade. Very interesting. And this goes to what I was saying earlier about the disrespect of our freedom fighters of today, sheroes and heroes. Let's see. The other thing we're going to talk about, of course, again, and I mentioned earlier, we're going to get a special report on the going home services of Sister Ava Muhammad and Prince Asiel. And that's going to be coming from Brother Shaka Barak, based there in Chicago. You know, we have Chicago family, we got Detroit family, we got New York family, we got New York family. You know, we just got a whole bunch of folks that we've been able to build with over the years. And you're going to kind of see some of that now as MWM prepares to go into 25 cities, taking now the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. Family, it has been a real journey. It has been a real quest, I'm telling you. But it's one that has been a labor of love. It's been many ups and downs, but I can tell you it had to be done for real. In order to move some things forward, sometimes there are some things that also must happen. And so, you know, we can bring the receipts on some of that. And so very soon, by the way, family, you're going to hear an attack on me coming from a female who was one of our volunteers over the years. And, you know, once we realized that there was a type of instability mentally that we could not, you know, we're not trained to deal with that kind of mental disability. And so, you know, we had to kind of, you know, release her or remove her from our interactions. And as a result, she's gone on an attack of me and others. So you'll be hearing more about that soon. But I look at it as a rites of passage, because when you're in the movement, you do not go unscathed, or you do not go unattacked. And so, you know, we look at this stuff now as in, yeah, whatever, because we already know it's coming. And then realizing that we are not only getting ready to move forward and charge into the United States government with genocide, but we're bringing forward the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide, bringing our first summit to the U.S. for next year. When we close out this year's 25-year anniversary, we'll end it with a major summit, a international African women's power and leadership summit, which will happen next year. I'll tell you about that later, but that's all a part of this year's 25-year anniversary, the planning for it, and a lot of other major things. So, again, it goes without saying to be attacked, or an attempted whatever, you know, goes with the territory. So, you know, we kind of feel blessed because, it just really gives me more insight, and not just insight, but it just helps to validate really some of what we're doing, because if we weren't making headway and weren't stepping on toes and weren't exposing people, then the system of white supremacy would not send its minions and its other ancient mamas to attack us. Yes, I said that, and I meant that. All right. At any rate, moving right along. Again, we're going to talk with Brother Shep very shortly, and with that, we're going to talk about more about Dr. Matula Shakur. And with that said, family, I want to also remind everyone that here in Philly, we're going to do one of our major Black activities, or shall I say programs. And it is, what we've learned is we don't want to depend on membership or donations or whatever. We've already looked to see how that works in real time, particularly when it comes to our women. Now, if MWM had connected itself to the Democratic Party, or definitely not a problem, but, you know, that stuff, or had connected to corporations or whatever, we would have had anything and everything we could have even possibly wanted over these past years. But since I knew that's not what we were going to do ever, particularly not with European people, beyond, you know, certainly not beyond any real point, then we knew we had to weather the storm and figure out how we were going to proceed in raising our own monies, because our focus has always been about self-determination. And again, we're going to demonstrate what our people have shown us for decades, demonstrate and bring it forward in a way that shows we can do this ourselves, our own independent institutions. I'm going to tell you about the MWM Universal Movement's Black Print Agenda 25, which definitely is not about trying to get some grants or some corporate sponsoring, which unfortunately 90% of what you're seeing and hearing that talks about social justice or change or whatever, best believe is connected directly to the system. So I'm going to tell you more about that a little later on too. All right, at any rate, shortly we're going to talk with Brother Shep. We're going to talk about Dr. Matula Shakur, what's going on with the African American parade this year that's in New York. And then after that, we're going to talk with Brother Shaka Barat, and he's going to tell us about both of the services that he attended, which of course was the service of Sister Ava Muhammad and that of Prince Asiel. Both of these now ancestors were, you know, very, very powerful in their nations. Of course, Sister Ava Muhammad, the Nation of Islam, she was the first sister minister, literally over a mosque, for lack of a better word, but she was the first minister woman of the Nation of Islam, and some say of modern-day Islam, period. Okay, so that's to be duly noted, for sure. And certainly in her own right, as a lawyer, as an author, et cetera, she definitely was dynamic. Okay, so also, we're going to hear a report that talks about Prince Asiel. Of course, he represented the African Hebrew nation. I'm so thankful that I did get a chance to sit with Prince Asiel a little while back. And, you know, he was very, very supportive of the Million Women March. Oh, my gosh, I can't even tell you all just, you know, how incredible that relationship was over the years. And, of course, Sister Ava Muhammad spoke at the Million Woman March for 1997, and so we will pay tribute to her this year for the 25-year anniversary. Speaking of that, it is coming up, and it is a year-long commemoration. We're not just doing one day. It's a year-long commemoration. We hope that people do come to Philly on October 29th, but if you can't, that's okay, because we're going to be coming to at least 25 cities, of course, you know, during the course of 2023, bringing the Black Print Agenda 25. And I'm going to tell you more about that shortly as well. Okay, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. I do see Brother Shep is in queue, and we're going to get ready to come to him. And again, family, our dialogues are geared now more towards solution orientation. So we're going to bring you information. We're going to bring you situations. But we also are going to bring you what we believe are going to be at least some possible solutions, or at least, you know, something that will bring some kinds of resolutions, and at least propose it as such. We can't just talk about the problems anymore and just leave it at that. We've got to talk about this is what we're going to do, or what we think we need to do, and this is how we think we're going to do it, and so forth. If folks ain't ready for that, then they ain't ready for much of nothing. That's the bottom line. So, again, we're going to talk about the situation that we're getting ready to hear about with the African-American parade in New York. And family, I want you all to feel free to chime in and to provide your insight, your, of course, views, but also, you know, what do we need to do for the future, right? I mean, we got to start talking more about that. That's why with the We Charge Genocide 21, we talk about human rights, because as long as we're just focusing on civil rights, they're going to get us. See, we have to start asserting some other kinds of things. And so we had to, you know, scale back the We Charge Genocide over the past couple of years due to COVID and some internal sabotage stuff. But again, come December, we will be ready for International Human Rights Day, and we will be returning to New York. But this time, we have a location for the conference, as well as to take the signatures, the letter of intent to the United Nations. So I'll tell you about that before we close out as well. Okay, we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Brother Shep in a minute. And again, big ups to my Brother Shep and my other brothers, Brother Ray Ray, Brother Mike, New World. I mean, I got some really dynamite Black men in our circle who continuously do the work. See, and this is very important, that sisters in particular continue to hail our brothers up, to continue to let folks know how much we appreciate them. And so, you know, when you see Black men doing the kinds of work that, you know, is not only mandated, but that is representing an unapologetic Black kind of position, hey, they got my respect for sure. Other folks, maybe not. And that's just the way it is. So listen, let's go to our live line and let's welcome our Brother Shep and to our New Day family dialogue for tonight. And we're going to talk about what's going on in New York, and particularly Dr. Matula Shakur. We ain't having it. So listen, let's go to our live line. Hey, Brother Shep, how you doing tonight? Uh-oh, I thought that was Brother Shep.
Hello?
Oh, there you go. Okay. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Brother Shaka.
Okay. Oh, Brother Shaka. Okay, my apologies. Hold on a minute, because I have you coming up for the next segment.
That's right. I'm
okay.
Early.
All right, no problem. No problem. Stay right there, Brother Shaka. Stay right there. Hold on. Okay. All right, my apologies. I thought that was Brother Shep, but Brother Shaka is going to be joining us in a few moments. And again, he's going to give us our report on Sister Ava and Prince Asiel. Okay, so Brother Shaka, you stay right there. Okay, I see Brother Shep now. I hope that's Brother Shep. Let me see now. Hold on one moment. Let's see. Hey, Brother Shep, is that you?
I'm here, but I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, we hear you loud and clear, brother.
Oh, okay, because I had said something a couple of times, and then our Brother Shaka was there. Yeah,
okay,
I'm here. Peace,
yeah.
Everybody.
All right. Peace to you, my brother. How are you this evening?
A little tired. It's been, you know, quite a busy schedule for me, particularly, you know, unfortunately, my mom passed away, and I just got back, from dealing with all of that in Louisiana, but... You know, I'm staying busy.
Oh, wow. Our condolences.
Yeah, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, our condolences to you and the family. Yes, yes. Wow. Whew. Yeah, well, then I know this is really a kind of roller coaster time for you.
Yeah, well, we only have one mom, and when that happens,
yeah,
those of us that, you know, it's always a different thing, you know, the first time.
Surely. Surely,
yeah.
Surely. Well, we welcome our ancestors, I tell you, because right about now, you know, I think that's what's going to help make the difference in us moving forward. So, you know, that's the way I kind of look at it now. I'm very thankful for our ancestors.
Yes, definitely.
Where
do you want me to start?
Well, I'm turning the mic over to you, so you have the report. You start where you want to start.
Okay. I guess basically what we can look at is this was all basically around our captive freedom fighters, also known as political prisoners, that have been captured in this country in general, but particularly focusing on our elders. Ones that were involved in the Black Liberation and New African Independence Movement back in the late 60s, throughout the 70s, and into the early 80s. Most of them have been forgotten about, unfortunately, by the Black community itself in general. But our elders, again, a lot of them are in their 70s and some approaching 80, like Rochelle McGee is in his 80s. Fortunately, we just got Sundiata Okoli home due to the power of the people and all the work over the decades. And I'll give a quick, you know, report on that. We actually had a gathering for him last night, which contributed to my being tired right now. But I'm going to give a Sundiata in a minute before I end my presentation, so to speak. But yeah, we got to bring them home. They are dying inside of these prisons. They're victims of elder abuse. I mean, medical neglect and elder abuse, particularly because of their age, and then of course because of the politics. So we're taking a new approach in terms of holding those accountable that took oaths as being doctors. And those who are supposed to take care of elders, you know, they're not doing it across the board. And so we want to approach them not in an antagonistic way, but in a way of them of letting them know that, well, this is what you're supposed to be doing, and you're ignoring our captives in prison. And so it's been, you know, basically we're setting a whole national campaign to do that. Now, in relationship to that, definitely we're looking at medical neglect. We look at Dr. Mutulu Shakur. Doc has stage 4 cancer. He was just recently denied being released for compassionate reasons, or what they call compassionate release, by the judge, who's been flip-flopping. First, he said that that he wasn't seriously sick enough, and then recently he admitted, well, yes, he is sick enough. He's about to die. And then he reversed his decision and said, oh, it's not up to me. It's up to another department. So they're giving us the red tape runaround with Dr. Matulu's life, you know, and we're dealing with that. And, you know, again, we want to bring him home so he can spend those last days with his family and loved ones, such as what we did with Russell Maroon Schultz when he was released under those conditions. And he was able to do that last year. What we did was every year since 1991, we have participated in Harlem's African-American Day Parade. And it was basically founded by mainly Brother Abe Snyder. And Abe offered us, you know, a spot in the parade every year. You know, we didn't have to register. We didn't have to fill out no paperwork. He said, well, this parade is going to support political prisoners. And so every year we marched. And unfortunately, Abe got older and was unable to mentally and physically run the parade anymore. Some other folks took over. And they began to change things, you know, as Negroes will do. And we had to go through the whole thing of registering and everything else. So in 2019, she laughs. That's true. You know, I'm laughing too. That's because I'm tired, but I'm really pissed off with them. But in any case, in 2019, for the first time, we put a float, you know, with our contingent, which is known as the Freedom Fighters Contingent. We named it, you know, under the Safia Noah Foundation, named after Safia Bakari and Albert Noah Washington, veteran Panthers. They're now ancestors, you know, in tribute to the work they did. And we put a float in, and they put us at the very end of the parade in 2019. So we were literally out there from like 10 in the morning until like close to 4 o'clock waiting to be part of the parade. And again, it was at the very end. So we had a lot of elders with us, which is one of the reasons why we got the float, because a lot of them are unable to walk those 35 blocks from 110th to 135th and more anymore. So we complained about it. We went to their meeting. They tried to shut us down. You know, the head Negro in charge, he tried to ignore the fact that we were there. But we got to them and let them know we weren't going to have it anymore. So obviously the pandemic came in 2020, and they did not do the parade. And again in 2021, they were afraid, and they still didn't do it. We still marched. You know, we pulled people together because our position was that our freedom fighters are in prison dying of COVID, and we need to let the people know that. So we still marched, you know. Freedom Fighters Contingent will always march. And so we didn't let that stop us. This year, for the first time since 2019, they decided to make it public again. So they called us early to make sure we were registered this time because they didn't want to have no problems with us. And we registered. We just recently raised the $2,500 that was required to get a float, which is now a requirement. We used to be able to have cars. You know, we used to have a car caravan and decorated and along with the marches, but they decided no more vehicles. Only one was allowed. You had to buy a float. You know, just another way to make sure that those of us groups that don't have a lot of capital cannot be able to do it. You know, I mean, of course, the big unions and the police organizations, black police, black this, they can do it. They have the money for it, and all the nonprofits. But police prisoners support groups, of course, our funds are limited. Plus, they're being utilized, you know, to support the prisoners. So we asked for people to donate, and just as they did in 2019, we got the money, we got the float. We put people in, including myself, to volunteer to help them out this year. So So after we march, we'll go back and help get the other groups out, you know, into the parade from the blocks that they're on and lined up for. That would ensure that we could get earlier because, well, we can't help you out if we're still waiting. So we need to march early with all the other dignitaries and other Negro groups. We need to march earlier. So that way our elders and our group won't be sitting around for hours waiting. So that was our strategy. It did work. We made a call for people to gather outside of the Schomburg Library today, which is the same day that they held their press conference with their celebrities and the press and media and so forth, which took place inside the Schomburg. Since we are volunteers, we had to be inside. So the plan was to, on the outside, have people saying that we want Mutulu Shakur to be recognized as an honoree. And on the inside, we would do the networking and the politicking to approach those honorees who were accepted by them, which I'm going to get into, and make sure that his name was mentioned. Just to backtrack just a minute, when we attended the meetings this year, we were told that the theme of this year's parade is good health is essential. So they wanted to have doctors and medical practitioners and health and healing people to be honored as grand marshals. So that's why we had said, well, we want Dr. Mutulu Shakur to be included in that. For folks who don't know, Dr. Mutulu Shakur was one of the people who, actually in 1970, he's one that began working with Lincoln Detox when they took, and then when they took over Lincoln Hospital. Basically, it was to use acupuncture instead of methadone to treat the drug addiction from heroin, which was rampant throughout the black and brown community during the 70s. This was instrumental because from that, literally hundreds of our brothers and sisters began to learn acupuncture and bring that into the communities. Another brother out in the West Coast, Dr. Small, he did the same thing. You know, working with the Panther Party out there. So Dr. Shakur, he founded the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association of North America, also known as BANA, the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture, and his work successfully trained, again, hundreds of acupuncturists, and it treated thousands of poor and elderly patients who would otherwise have no access to treatment of this type. He lectured at many medical conferences. He actually went to China and did a presentation there, you know, in terms of how we utilize and altered traditional Chinese acupuncture so it would fit into our communities. And acupuncture is revolutionary because you can set up an acupuncture center right inside of the community room in the projects. Or you can do it in your basement. You know, you can do it in churches. You know, so it is a survival program. And, of course, Dr. Shakur was one of the lead advisors in our medical clinics that we had. For people who don't know, the Black Panther Party and the Young Lords Party, we actually put out the whole issue about sickle cell. And I didn't mention, I'm actually a veteran of the original Black Panther Party. I didn't mention that part right here in New York. So this is all from experience, knowing what we did. We did not only the sickle cell testing, but we did lead poisoning testing. We once commandeered the tuberculosis testing trucks and brought them into the hood when they refused to drive in there themselves to test people on TB. You know, all areas in that and a whole first aid thing that we dealt with. And we had free medical clinics. Our children were being victims of rat bites, you know, from inside of the ghetto because of the conditions that were there. Poor prenatal care, which still exists. We did that. And so all those medical programs, and there's a very excellent book people should look at by a sister named Alonza Nelson, and she wrote a book, Body and Soul, which completely outlines all the medical programs and free clinics that we did back then. So the idea of free medicine is not something that just came up recently by white folks, but that's something we had in not just advocating, but actually doing it in the 70s. There's a thing called the Patient's Bill of Rights that you go in the hospital, you see that. It's watered down now, but that was initiated by us. We put that in there. You know, of course, we mentioned Overmaking Hospital and all the different programs that were done. So Dr. Matula Shakur was instrumental in all those things. And, of course, being a revolutionary, assisting in liberating our sister, Sada Shakur, they couldn't have this, you know. So he's been in prison all these decades, denied parole, I know for a fact, at least three times when he was supposed to have been. And they continuously denied him parole to get out. People might also not know that Dr. Matula Shakur is the stepdad of Tupac Shakur. And, you know, his partner was Afeni Shakur, another ancestor. So, New African Independence Movement is one of our leaders. He is 72 years old now. And, again, we want him to come home. So what these Negroes did was they said initially, oh, well, we don't know who he is. Who is this Shakur person? It's like, how are you going to have a national parade, have a theme, and don't do your investigation? Then they said, we attacked that. They misspelled his name and, you know, all of that. We gave him a brief history, written down who he is, and that he was actually a health hero in Harlem. You can't have a Harlem African-American Day parade dealing with health and medicine and not include him within that, because he saved literally thousands of lives. I'm going to close in a second. The other thing they said was, well, you know, we decided who the people who were going to be honored would be. We did that in February, and you didn't submit. Well, how can you submit if nobody tells you that this is the time to submit? So they decided who they wanted to be honored, you know, who their honorees are. And, yeah, they're black and brown people, but they're not exactly community folks. They're professionals, you know, in the hospitals and everything, which is a whole nother issue, I mentioned earlier about medical neglect in the prisons and so forth. So they're doing everything they can to. They can't outwardly say we don't want revolutionaries and political prisoners involved in the parade because, you know, they wouldn't have a parade. We would just shut that shit down, you know. And we have the history since 91 of being there. So at this point, they continue to refuse to acknowledge him. Today, the minute I walked into the press conference, and he came over to me and said, oh, we love Dr. Matula Shakur, and we know, you know, that, and we're gonna make sure that he gets acknowledged next year. It's like, he might not be here next year. He has stage 4 cancer. Well, if he does die, then we'll make sure we do an adequate tribute to him. For him and his family. I was like, I know I started to like go off, but I said, let me just chill out because we got a plan that we're going to do. I want to make sure that we get all the information out. So that's where we are with that situation on what we are going to do. The parade takes place on next Sunday, September the 18th. Again, we're going to have our float. We're scheduled right now to line up on 114th Street, but I'm not putting that out yet because I met with some folks there. This is the good thing. The people that we network with there, some of the board members are not those old folks who've been running stuff, don't want to change, and they're dissatisfied the way he, being the chair, and the other folks have been doing things. And so they said, well, you know, we need more young people in. We need to change the way things are done. And so we're working with them, so-called undercover, to get some changes done. You know, and we want to really get the parade so that it is actually what it was set out to be, to represent the community and not to satisfy sponsors who are involved and just, you know, just see black faces marching without any political substance to them. So that's where we are. Again, look at your emails. My email is panthershepcat@aol.com. That's Panther, PANTHERSHEPCAT, Panther, because I'm a panther. Shep, because I'm Brother Shep. Cat, because a panther is a cat. Hence, you get Panther Shep Cat at AOL.com. Hit me up, and I will put you in our network, and you'll get the information about what we're doing with that and other things coming up for our political prisoners, our captive freedom fighters. You know, so we're doing more than just the parade. We have our campaigns. You definitely want to bring Kamal Siddiqui home. I want to get on this show soon to let us know about that. He's actually in the Augusta so-called prison hospital where people have been dying in there decades, and conditions there are genocidal, you know, to the utmost. He was put there by the same judge that convicted Imam Jamil Al-Amin, who people know as H-Rap Brown, and of course Fatou Shakur in that whole Atlanta system. So three of our freedom fighters right now are being oppressed in the prisons in Atlanta. So we're making those connections. And, again, we want to spread it all over this country that our elders need to come home because they're being victims of elder abuse, medical neglect, and outright murder inside of these prisons of the United States. So that's my presentation. If anybody has any questions, I'll be here. I can hang out for another 15 minutes.
Okay, well, let me just ask real quick, family, do you have a question or a comment for Brother Shep? Because we'll bring you in right now to do that. We have a few more minutes, and, again, we'll give out his email address before we close out tonight so you can have that in case you didn't hear it. We'll repeat that for you again as well. But one of the things I wanted to say, my brother, is that first of all, I want to thank you for the continued work that you do, because I get your emails, and you, like me, you send out a lot of information on a regular basis, and that's what needs to happen. So I really appreciate, the hard work. And by the way, congratulations on another incredible Black August. I saw a lot of the stuff that you all were doing for Black August, and again, you know, you do it every year, so it's you know, not like it's anything new, but, you know, big ups to you all for continuing to do that work. Also, let me see. I know New York family tends to always come down and support Mumia, and of course, there is a hearing coming up for October 19th. So I just wanted to remind everyone again, and I know you will be doing that as well, Brother Shep. Again, Mumia's next trial date is October 19th. I just want to put that out there to everyone. Okay, it doesn't seem like there's any questions or comments for you right now. So we'll just, again, give out the email information one more time. Brother Shep, you can do that while we still have you.
Okay. Before I do that, just to mention to people, our campaign for that compassionate release of Dr. Mutula Shakur, people can go online and sign a petition for that. One second, I got.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm in that house. You know, you probably hear the music. People riding by with these cars and the music blast, like we want to hear all their music. Okay. Yes, you can. It said. So if people are ready, get your pens ready for that, and also for my email again. You can sign a petition by going to bit.ly/cr-petition. Again, that's bit.ly/cr-petition. PETITION. And you can click onto that and go directly to the petition so we can get that idiot in the White House who can actually do it right away. He can release Mutulu. And it's sad to say, speaking of Negroes, when Obama was in office, he refused to grant Mutulu Shakur a pardon, you know. People were running around talking about black president this, black president that. He's head Negro for real in charge. Now he bombed people over with the drones, but he ignored our political prisoners. And Matulu could have been released, you know, years ago while he was in office. He refused to do that. So we got to go to Biden now. Of course, Trump was not going to do it.
but this
is where we are.
Just as a reminder, how many times was Dr. Matulu's request for parole turned down?
Three times,
at
least that I know. That's
at least three,
four,
yeah.
I know. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, okay. What I want to say to people, I know it looks hard, and sometimes we feel down about this struggle, but it's a long one. We've been doing it for decades. But people need to always remember that these are freedom fighters. They're still in prison. They're still fighting. They're still doing work on the other side of the walls with the young folks that are there, holding classes, suffering oppression by being thrown into solitary confinement. I already mentioned the abuse and the medical neglect. I mean, and they're dying in there. They're still fighting. And we have to support them on this side. And we've had victories. Again, I mentioned Sunday Adekoli. He looks great, y'all.
Yeah.
84 years old.
Oh, you were going to tell us about the event. There was an event last night. You didn't tell us about.
Yeah, it was basically a family event, and for those of us in the party and everything. But on November 5th, we're going to have, I believe it's the 5th. We're going to have our Freedom Dance. We haven't done that in a couple of years. We usually do that because that's when Asada Shakur was liberated. So we have a benefit dance for our political prisoners. So he's going to be there. It's going to be a public welcome home for Sunday out. Again, if you get my email, which I'm going to give out, you get all that information about the Freedom Dance. We have the Black Panther Film Festival coming up in October, also supporting political prisoners. So we're doing a lot of stuff here. So get to my email. Make sure you become part of that network. It's a private network. We send BCCs. It's not a listserv, so nobody can compromise it. And again, it's with Sundiata, we basically just talked a little bit about how we got him out. You know, the lawyers were there, his family was there. A lot of movement people were there. And then some of the folks that, which I wanted to really say, is that the victories we had. You know, Herman Bell has been liberated. He was there. We've liberated Jaleel Montekin, who was unable to come because he's still upstate. Daruba Bermahar, we know right now he's dealing with cancer. You know, so he's in New York getting treatment for that. But, he was liberated. Sekou Odinga was liberated.
Again,
Russell Maroon passed away, but we did liberate him. Robert Seth Hayes, same thing. He was liberated, then he passed away. Because of the medical conditions that they underwent in prison. That's why when they came out, they weren't with us very long. But we did get them out. And particularly Sonny Ali, they said he would never, ever get out of prison. But we don't listen to what the enemy says. We do what we got to do. And that's why we want people to move forward and help us get the rest of our freedom fighters out. Rochelle McGee is the longest held one in prison. When we talk about Black August, he was directly involved in that whole prison movement and rebellion, in California, which started with August. So Rochelle needs to come home. He's 82 years old. No reason why he should be in prison. And they can continuously say, oh, they're a risk to escape, and they're still a threat, to society. Bullshit. I mean, what the hell are they going to do?
Right.
Come on. I mean, Maroon was in a wheelchair, couldn't even walk.
Right.
Dying of cancer, what is he going to do? They need to come home straight up. And so that's where we need to go with that. But we've had victories, and we celebrate them and use those to motivate us to bring the rest of them home.
It's just a continuation of their wickedness.
Yes.
Just a continuation
okay,
of your witness.
Last time, my email is PantherChefCat@AOL.com. PantherChefCat@AOL.com.
All right, Brother Chef. Thank you much. Thank you much. And we're going to have to bring you back because we don't have time now, but I want to hear some more from you in regards to the Black Lives Matter thing as it pertains to Black August. We need to share that information the next time because, you know, we got a lot of thinkers.
You talking about Negroes?
We got a lot of thinkers. That's right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there were some great people that were involved in that movement.
Yes.
And because of the Negroes, they left and they didn't be, they're not involved with it anymore. But it had potential, but it didn't follow through. And for folks, when you see BLM, that's Black Liberation Movement. That
That's
does not
right.
stand for no Black Lives Matter. That's the Liberation
That's
Movement.
Right.
And they were afraid That's of right. it. They diluted it. And they got rid of it because they didn't want to deal with our political prisoners. And they do not deal with our freedom fighters. How can you have a
That's
Black
right.
Lives Matter and don't care about our captive freedom fighters? Bullshit.
Well, hey, Brother Shep, you can when you got $6 million coming from George Soros alone. So, you know, needless to say, and I mean, anyone that did the research, the research, when they saw what happened in Ferguson with the hands up, don't shoot, and then what happened and it transformed into the Black, anyone that just took the time to do a little research, they could have saw for themselves up close and personal how it was being co-opted. And this is what they do with anything and everything that they think is going to have a certain kind of impact. They either infiltrate it or just totally try to take it over. And this is what has happened with that so-called Black Lives Matter thing. You know, it was funny to me from the very beginning, to tell you the truth. But, you know, clearly now people can see because there's lawsuits up the yin-yang now.
Yeah, but even on that level, we always do, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing lawsuits as a tactic, but that's not the solution, to go to your enemy to help you deal with a situation with your brothers and sisters. We need to deal with them. It's like we need to deal with a whole lot of folks hanging around here doing, saying that they're this and they're that and they aren't.
Oh, yeah, you know you're talking my talk now for real. All right, my brother. Well, I thank you again, and we got to have you back real soon and really bust it up and, you know, speak some more truth to power. Bring these things into the light that they needs to be brought into. So I thank you again, and again, my condolences, our condolences to you and your family.
Thank you. What's the call?
All right.
What's the call?
Free them all. Free them all.
Free them all.
Free them all now. Ashe. All right, brother. Peace to you.
All right,
family.
Peace.
That was our brother Shep, and you'll be hearing more from him in the near future. There's always some activities that he and our family are doing up in the New York area. So shout out to Sister Keisha if she's tuning in. They had a dynamite program the other evening, and, of course, Brother Ray Ray as well. But anyway, we get ready to go to our live line again. We have Brother Shaka Barak coming in from Chirac, also known as Chicago, one of our sister cities, by the way. And we'll be coming back there soon to bring the Million Woman March Universal Movement. We are coming. The first global movement for women and girls of African descent is on its way with the Black Print Agenda 25. And we love Chicago because my sister Kamar, she's one of our true soldiers. You know, some people came into MWM because, you know, it was glitzy for some, it was hype for some, but some saw what we were really doing, getting ready to do, and they held on, you know, and so we are so thankful. In fact, we're going to salute them this year. Those sisters that stayed with us in one way or the other, we're going to salute them this year for MWM 25. So I'll tell you more about that later. But right now, let's go to our live line, and we're going to welcome. Actually, this is Brother Shaka was one of our brothers in support in 97. You know, so we're going to tell you about the new call for what we call the serious brothers in support of the Million Woman March for MWM25. But anyway, let's go to our live line and let's talk to our brother Shaka Barak. Of course, the Marcus Garvey Institute, the UNIA, ACL, and he'll tell you about other stuff that he's involved in because this brother does and has been doing work for decades. And that's what we always want to highlight, folks that are consistent and constantly grow and develop. This is what we need to see, talk more about, exemplify, and raise up. Okay, so let's go to our live line. And Brother Shaka, how you be?
Greetings, my sister. How are you?
Oh, you know. As I always say, brother, as long as I can do this work and do it the way the ancestors have guided me to do, I'm good.
All right, all right. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I want to begin by just giving a little background in terms of my relationship with Prince Asiel. I first met him here in Chicago at a program that the UNIA was holding at the African Orthodox Church. Prince was there with Reverend L. Sampson, and they had been invited by my mentor, the Honorable Dr. Charles L. James. This is a man who was a student of the Course of African Philosophy, taught to him by the Honorable Marcus Garvey, who would later teach me the course. So Reverend Sampson read the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey's message from Atlanta, which moved me to tears, which reinforced my love for the Honorable Marcus Garvey and now for these two men. I worked closely with Reverend Sampson to take busloads of men and boys to the Million Man March. I put out the first flyer out of Chicago to attend the Million Man March by riding on our buses. Later on, Prince Asiel led the first National Gang Peace Summit in Chicago. So Prince Asiel invited me to serve as his co-host on a television show called A Spiritual Alternative. I aided him during some controversy, and he sent my wife and Brenda Burgess to Israel. As you remember, she worked very closely as your Midwest representative of the Million Woman March.
And a sidebar, and that is really how that happened, because he invited me to attend. I couldn't attend, and so I requested that two of my representatives go.
Okay.
And it was Sister Kamar and Sister Jennifer.
That's right. The following year, I went as Prince Asiel's guest to Israel. I became his national representative. I bought and read all of Rabbi Ben Ami's books, which he and the elders of the African Hebrew Israelite community were kind enough to sign with their well wishes. When Prince Asiel and Gregory Turner were indicted for the offense of traveling to Africa, for talking to Africans, and for discussing the harm the United States sanctions were doing to Africans in Zimbabwe without a license or a pass, I went and supported Prince Asiel. I went to court with him and Gregory Turner. And I wrote regular articles in their defense in the Chicago Crusader newspaper. And when they were sentenced and went to prison, I wrote them letters regularly. Through Prince Asiel, I met African Hebrews in different parts of the country, Washington, Atlanta, New York. I visited his home on many occasions after he got out and had to visit him at his new home in downtown Chicago a few months before he died. I went to the restaurant and shared my condolences with his family. At the funeral, I read my resolution from the Marcus Garvey Institute and the UNIA. I wasn't allowed to finish it. But later the family said thanks and that they knew I loved Prince Asiel. He loved me, continued to help bring them comfort. I spoke at his funeral before Reverend Sampson, Reverend Harding, and Reverend Barrett. I was in the mayor's group only because I stood up and wasn't going to be deterred from giving my resolution. I wore all white and was seated about six rows behind the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. As I left the platform, I stopped, clicked my heels, and saluted Minister Farrakhan, and he returned the salute. Minister Ismail reached out from his seat to shake my hand, and Sister, several others shook my hand and hugged me and thanked me as I left the building on my way to my car. It was outside that I gave the resolution to R.L., his son. So that was a unique experience because the room was filled. It showed how many people loved Prince Asiel, and the mayor was there in person, and the dignitaries from across the state were there, representatives, state representatives, elected officials, former elected officials, religious leaders, spiritual leaders, they were all there. Now, let me move now to, unless you have a question, I can move to Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Well, no, before you do that, let's just recap or go back for one moment, because some people might not be familiar. We're talking about Prince Asiel, but I think it's important that we connect the black dots in such a way that we go back a little bit, because, you know, here at New Day and in some of our other sessions, we talk about nation building. We talk about being self-governing, and so forth. So if you would, Brother Shaka, kind of share a little bit of history in the context of Prince Asiel being one of the key original people coming out of Ben Amin's nation, Hebrew nation. And again, I think it's important that we differentiate, because in some cities you do have groups, you know, call themselves Hebrew or whatever. I think it's important that we make it very clear that we're talking about a group, an entity that started in the 1960s that was very visible in terms of black nationalism, self-determination. They had restaurants, they had hotels, and so forth. We're talking about 1960s, 70s. So I just want to put that in context for folks. We're not talking about just some group that you might see pop up right now. We're talking about folks who literally not only did stuff in the United Nations, but had their own communities in various cities. And lastly, even in Atlanta, the Soul Vegetarian restaurant still exists in Atlanta. Of course, we just said Chicago, which I had the opportunity, my son and I went a few months back. So Brother Shaka, just share a little bit about the history of the African Hebrew nation and the importance of that kind of representation and the attack that occurred on them after, you know, coming forward so clearly.
Well, thank you for backing us up so that we can cover those things. The African Hebrew Israelite community left out of the United States in 1967. They went to Liberia, West Africa first, and they stayed there for about 3.5 years. But, you know, they came to Africa, as most people do, with the wrong idea of what life would be like in the bush. They wanted to cleanse themselves of the negritude, of the negative attitude that they had acquired in the United States, so they went to the bush. But in the bush, those tents that they had gotten from Sears and Roebuck, they wouldn't work under the harsh weather in Liberia, West Africa. There was brothers there who had been there since the time of the passing of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, when his successor, James R. Stewart, moved the headquarters of the UNIA to Liberia. So those Garveyites that were there aided the African Hebrew Israelite community, saved their lives, according to what they would tell me in their reports. And so they were able to stay there, get strong, develop the character and the will before moving into Israel. Now, once they moved into Israel, Dimona was a place where there was a nuclear plant out there, and so therefore it was a safe environment, but it was kind of removed from the regular tracks that people would go to if they went to Israel. So there they were able to grow and develop their community. In fact, we call it the Village of Peace. While I was there, not only did I not see any violence, but everybody was so happy and it was so peaceful. And every day, you know, you could eat a great vegan meal and have some, you know, healthy discussions and see brothers and sisters running around the compound exercising. And Rabbi Ben Ami would sometimes lead his group of princes in exercising on a regular basis. And there in Dimona, they were also able to create music and some great songs and great artists. And so while we were there, they entertained us with a culture that I still love today. And so they were, again, very enterprising with the vegan diet. To the extent that, as you had mentioned, sister, they were able to set up restaurants, and some of those restaurants still exist today. And here in Chicago, we have one of the most successful, I think, soul vegetarian restaurant, and a lot of nationalists who are looking at changing their diet, even Muslims and Hebrews and others and Christians go there. Because it is one of the most healthiest restaurants in the city, and they've did some changes there. So it's a sit-down restaurant, and you can see all of this wonderful food. You can walk down in the buffet style and pick out whatever it is that you want to eat and whatever it is you want to package up and take home. So that's the difference between the African Hebrew Israelites under the leadership of Rabbi Ben Ami and Prince Asiel. But you know, they wanted to kill them in Israel. They wanted to stop them. They wanted to slow them down. They wanted to take away their manhood and their womanhood. And so under the leadership of men like Rabbi Ben Ami and Prince Asiel, they said, oh no, we're going to stay strong. We're going to stay to ourselves. We're going to stay in our culture. We will not be deterred. And so that is the kind of leadership that Prince Asiel had. I mean, anybody who ever really needed some help and needed support, if you called on Prince Asiel, you could get that kind of support. So Ben Ami stayed in Israel for 23 years before he came back to the United States. And the reason he came back was for the Gang Peace Summit, because it had called together international and national leadership to Chicago so that we could give support to those street tribes that wanted to develop peace and stop the violence. And, you know, just recently, one of those who supported it from behind the wall, Larry Hoover, who was the co-founder of the Gangster Disciples, just renounced the Gangster Disciples, renounced Growth and Development, renounced the literature and the Black Star, because all he wants to do is give support to his family through visits, through letter writing, through phone calls, because, you know, a lot of brothers, when they get locked up, their family suffers because they could be a great leader of a street tribe. But when you go and get locked up, the leadership that you should have been having for your family is gone. And so he wants to give back to his family. But then we raised the question, and I wrote an article in response to Larry's article that was in the Chicago Sun-Times newspaper, where he made this renouncing of the Gangster Disciples. Well, why did he do it? He did it because he realized that the idea that he had of a benevolent group failed. The idea that he had of the groups becoming legitimate failed. And so it's like the Frankenstein monster. If you create the monster and then you lose control, the monster must go. And so he renounced the gangster disciples. Well, what about these other street tribes and gangs that are out here that have failed? Because for the most part, they have failed. They might have started out with good intentions, but today our young people aren't listening to the leaders. They're not listening to, they're not reading and studying the literature. They're out there on their own. And so since they failed, we might as well do as Larry Hoover has done, follow that example of renouncing all of these gangs across the country. In fact, across the world, because, you know, they exist, not these but in particular, but we have produced these kind of gangs in the hope that we could bring about some kind of comfort and aid to our youth, and that they would become benevolent and they'd become helpful. And it didn't work. So it was time to shut that project down and then begin to look to some other form of either spirituality or some other nationalistic group that is heading in the right direction, so that we can not just drop our flags, but to pick up something different and something new. So we're looking to see what direction is Larry Hoover going to head in the very near future.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, thank you, Brother Shaka. That kind of gave us what we needed in terms of Prince Asiel, and certainly he will be missed. He was always, always very gracious to us, for us, and showed, you know, much love and support for MWM. So, you know, he will always be a very valued brother in support. So let's move on with, again, you were able to attend the homegoing services for Sister Ava Muhammad. So let us move into that.
For over 30 years, I had been listening to Dr. Attorney Ava Muhammad speak with that beautiful voice that almost sounded like she was always praying or singing, and her remarks were always flawless. I enjoyed listening to her so much, especially recently when she began to champion the idea separation or else. And so I remember when we were about to hold our UNIA High Executive Council here in Chicago, in 2019, I was serving as the Minister of Education for the UNIA and Third Assistant President General. And so I called the office of Minister Louis Farrakhan, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to come and speak or send a representative. He sent Dr. Ava Muhammad, and I did my research on her and introduced her to the audience. And needless to say, she gave a great presentation and was well received. I especially liked her phrase, separation or else. I was advised to arrive at Dr. Ava Muhammad's funeral early so as to get a seat, get a good parking spot, and to speak to the person I should give the resolution from the President General of the UNIA to. I was seated by the Chief of Protocol, Brother Thomas Muhammad. I was in the section of the student ministers, Brother Barney Muhammad, and other men dressed in their beautiful-looking blue FOI uniforms that always remind me of the uniforms of the Universal African Legions that the UNIA had and is still looking to resurrect. I could see all the dignitaries that attended and the family members. My division president, Clyde Banks, called me because I was expecting to meet him there because he was bringing the sign, the resolution. He called me because he wasn't coming in to come to the gate and get the resolution. When I returned, Brother Thomas Muhammad of Protocol, Chief of Protocol, he allowed me to sit behind the family in a seat right in front of where Minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan would be speaking. So I observed that the minister who officiated over the funeralization or the home going, he praised the black woman. His presentation and that of Minister Ishmael was of such that you could see the black woman, the African woman, in a different light. She was an exceptional woman, but still an African woman who rose to the occasion and accepted leadership. She was the first to be a leader over a mosque. She was the spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So his presentation about her was well received. It was long and lengthy, even though you could see the strain that the elder is under because of his age and because of his illness, but he represented her and he stood his ground and he made it clear that he was not going to leave there until he finished giving her the honor that was due. And they gave her an honor by making it clear that, and you could see it was real clear when the MGT roared when she was praised for her great work, her great mind, and for her willingness to fight to defend the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and what the Nation of Islam stands for. Although I handed my UNIA resolution in, it was the only one that was, the mayor's actually, was the only one that was read. And so, but I'm sure mine got to the hands of the family. So no need to say it, but it's true. The mosque was filled to capacity. And so this sister was honored. Her family was given comfort. I didn't speak to her husband, but I did get a chance to see him. This was the second time because I saw him in 2019 when he came there with her as she came representing the Nation of Islam at the UNIA program. So I'll stop there. If there are any questions or any other points you'd like to have made in reference to this great woman.
Okay. Before we ask if there's any questions or comments from the family, just want to mention again, of course, Sister Ava Muhammad was one of the speakers at the original 1997 Million Woman March, and we will be paying tribute or saluting her and a few other sisters who participated in 97, including Mother Winnie Mandela. We'll be saluting them this year for the 25-year anniversary as well. I think a sidebar, you know, I remember having a conversation with my brother, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, some years back. And in the conversation, Brother Shaka, he conveyed how, you know, he was very instrumental in, I'll use the word lobbying just to make the point, to really make sure that Sister Ava was to obtain the post that she ultimately did receive, which as you mentioned, was the first sister, the first female minister for the nation. And again, for those that might not know, as pertains to the religion of Islam, it is said she's literally the first in modern time to hold that kind of position. And so that's a very, very important. And the other thing I wanted to add is that going back to Prince Asiel, in connection with what you just said about the woman, one of the things, my last conversation with Prince Asiel right before he went into the hospital, which was just a few months ago, he conveyed that he really wanted to make sure that our sisters, that our women, was to begin to be heightened. He said, unless that happens, All this other stuff we're talking about is not going to move the way we want it to. And so he was very adamant in sharing that that was really a primary for him and also Prince Ariel in terms of really bringing forward our sisters in a manner of just unconditional types of positioning. So I just wanted to do the sidebar. And again, with Sister Aidan Muhammad, that too was exemplified, needless to say, in her role and position. And so,
well, that's a key point because, as you know, as you demonstrated with the Million Woman March, that women can do anything. there were those doubting Thomases that didn't believe that the women, after the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan called for the Million Man March and it was successful, that the women could come behind him and have a successful march. And it's like, whoa, yes, they can. And yes, they did. And so we are so proud of our African women, and we have confidence that whatever it is that we need to do, that's what's so important about what you did, Sister Fele Acheyanesu, Empress. You demonstrated, you helped us understand who we are and what power we have, what ability we have, what love we have for each other, what can be produced with unity and cooperation. We black men who supported the Million Woman March, I mean, we were just support. We were the supporting cast. But you all were the stars of that show. You all were the ones who made it happen. I mean, and I watched from the sidelines, the protection, as Sister Kamar, my wife, was organizing. One week it's one location, then the next week is another location. So now we're meeting twice a week, and the next week is another location. So now we're meeting 3 days a week. Next week is another location. Why? Because the sisters start standing up. The sisters start coming forward. The sisters start believing in themselves, and they were determined they were going to have a Million Woman March. And we took 65,000 out of Chicago and the surrounding area. So nobody has to convince me. I'm sold. That the black woman is the greatest woman on the earth, and with the black man, and there's nothing we can't do. That's why women, when women stand up, girls sit down. When men stand up, boys sit down.
That's
so I'm
right.
not even concerned about these problems that exist in our community. When we stand up, we'll get it done.
Ashe, Brother Shaka, and just to reemphasize something that you said, 60 family. Please take notes, and this is going to be in the 100 Amazing Facts about the Million Woman March, which is coming soon, the 25-year anniversary edition. 65,000 sisters, primarily some brothers too, but primarily sisters. 65,000 came from the Illinois area, and Chicago was the primary spearhead of that Midwest region. 65,000. Now note, we didn't already have an existing group, mosque, temple, church, none of that. You see? So you really, you know, it's been really painful, Brother Shaka, over the years that our people, particularly our historians, did not really embrace the Million Woman March and saw the real value of it. I'm kind of over it now, but at the same time, I'm not going to let that get dismissed like that either, because it doesn't
make sense. Well, here's what they
missed.
They missed traveling down the road from Chicago to Philadelphia and seeing our sisters on buses and cars, on motorcycles, seeing the sisters in the gas stations, you know, pumping gas to in their vehicles so that they could continue, and then station at the station, stop at the stop. Looking out the right side of the bus, you see the sister. Looking out the left side of the bus, you see these black women heading toward Philadelphia. That's what they missed. They missed seeing that. So what does it mean? It means that if you ever hear a black woman saying she's going to take a million black women anywhere in the world, pack your bag and get yourself on the road, because it's going to happen and you don't want to miss it again.
I know that's right, Brother Shocker. But the thing I have to also say is they weren't there or didn't see a whole lot of other stuff, but they still write about it and they still teach about it, you see. And so I'm just saying I would be remiss if I did not, you know, make it very clear that we have to deal with some in-house stuff as a people. And some of that has to do with the inequality that unfortunately still exists in our own circles, in our own communities, in our own families, and that there is an imbalance that has to be straightened out, that has to be put in its proper context. So I'm going to leave that alone for now. But
well, what you said earlier was you said that we have to be solution-oriented. You said it.
Yes.
That means that when we think of solving the problems, black men, black women, hand in hand, let's go get it done. There's no other way.
Right.
We're not getting ready to have no resolution as regards the violence in our community, the drugs in our community, the dropout in our community, the illiteracy in our community. We're not going to have that resolved by black men alone. Forget it. We're not going to have that resolved until black men and black women decide to work together. I mean, it just makes all the sense in the world. If black men say we will have a million-man march and they make it happen, and then black women say they're going to have a million-woman march and they make it happen, well, what sense
That's
would it
right.
make to separate them and then the men go their way and the women go their way? No, it's time
right.
to get together and tackle these problems. We might have to sit down and make a list. Okay, what do we start with first? And then what do we start with second? And what do we start with third? Because sometimes when you're building a nation, you're building an empire, you have to do the same thing. What are the first steps, the second steps, the third steps? That's what the white man done. That's why Queen
right.
Elizabeth II is buried with all of this royalty, because they decided how they were going to steal, what they were going to steal first, what they were going to take second, what they were going to conquer third, and so they got to where they are. And so we're going to ask ourselves, what are we going to build first? Where does the unity start? Where does the cooperation start? Where does the strategy begin? And go ahead and get whatever needs to be done, done. It ain't over. I don't care how bad it looks. I don't care how bad it looks. We can solve the problems of our people if black men and black women, no, I won't say if, when we work together. That's the only solution.
Ashe. Now, speaking of the so-called Queen of England, well, I can't say so-called. She was the Queen of England. You have something coming up to address that. Now, before you share that with us, Brother Shaka, I want to convey to folks briefly, little sidebar, Brother Shaka mentioned something very important. So here in Philly, we'll be observing, well, we're going to do what we call Million Women March Week. We've been doing that for, you know, more than 10 years, where we do a whole week of activities in commemoration of the Million Women March. This year, it's actually 10 days that we'll be doing it. Now, this is a kickoff for a year-long what we call expedition, and we call it the Divine Resurrection. So with that said, on the 29th of October is when we're going to do our first African, well, black, we call it black women, but it's black/African diasporic women's heritage parade. Because like Brother Shaka said, we're solution oriented. So we know we have to now document, research, put into educational form, disseminate our own history. So we've created the mechanisms to do that, which this year we'll have our first coloring book for our sister saints. Now, going to the sister saints, we're making certain that our women can begin to be recognized and their information more readily circulated. Here's the question. How are we as a people going to, for the future, make certain that our historical contributors of great significance is really in our communities made available? That's kind of a question number one. Now, again, here in Philly, October 29th, we'll do the mass assembly and parade, procession and parade. And then on the 30th, it's our first Black Family Unity Fest. See, Brother Shaka didn't even know that. But again, we are making it clear that while we have an agenda that, of course, is for and about our women and girls, because we have to do that, we also make it very clear that our agenda is about our families and communities. So, tell you more about that before we close out. Let's go back to Brother Shaka. And tomorrow, I think you said tomorrow, you're going to do a dialogue in regards to some other aspects of the passing of the Queen of England. Tell us a little bit about that, Brother Shaka.
Well, most of our listeners here have probably heard of the death of Queen Elizabeth II. But before we start shedding crocodile tears for the Queen, for her service to her imperial family, the Marcus Garvey Institute is hosting a panel discussion on the truth as it relates to the British and their early barbarism, their imperialism, their colonialism, their opium wars, their involvement in the transatlantic trade in Africans and slavery, and the Berlin Conference that carved up Africa. So tomorrow, Sunday the 11th, September the 11th, we will be hosting a discussion at the New Altgeld Library at 955 East 131st Street from 2 to 5 p.m. Now, I said the Altgeld Library. It's a $28 million library stuck in the middle of the projects. We want to encourage our people to use the library, to go in and take advantage of the library, get library cards. It is underutilized, and so we're going to do many things in the African community to raise the consciousness of our people and to raise the literacy among our people. So we will discuss Queen Elizabeth and the British and their role in trying to conquer the world to promote white supremacy. You know, in America, we're clear that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington had enslaved Africans, and even Benjamin Franklin for a minute before he turned to the Puritans held slaves. We know about white nationalism in America. We know that if you turn to Webster's dictionary, it's no accident that everything in there that pertains to white, the word white has a base in purity and goodness and all of the wonderful things. Devil's food cake, however, is black and dark, and all the words associated with black are negative. But Webster was a white nationalist. The white nationalists looked to find ways that they could create an American culture separate from the British culture, and to make sure that it was white. Well, the British were the first nationalists, the first white nationalists and white supremacists. Oh, it's horrible when you look at how they felt about the African, felt about anybody that was non-European or non-Aryan. So we have to ask ourselves, are we going to be honoring this former queen? Was she were the Britons some kind of blessing to humanity, or were they a plague? Were they a pandemic? Were they a disease among the darker people of the world? Was this a benevolent empire, or was it an empire of racism that dominated and destroyed darker people? Was this a empire that she represented that was friendly towards Africa, or was it anti-Africa, anti-African? Were achievements of this queen to be remembered and honored, or were they horrible incidents of barbarism that created a Holocaust and the death and destruction of Africa and African communities and African tribes and African civilizations? So tomorrow we're going to ask the question about British colonialism in North America, British colonialism in Africa, the British during the transatlantic slave trade, the British during World War I and World War II, because we didn't start, that's Africans, we didn't start World War I, but we were in it. Why were we in it? Because they could conscript us to go and fight for the British. They could conscript us to go and fight in World War II. In fact, we had some leaders, African leaders, black leaders, or Negro leaders, if you will, who also begged to be able to go and fight for America and fight for the British and fight for the French and fight for these folks who didn't care anything about them, but they thought that somehow if they went to war and they fought and died, that they might treat them differently. But what did we learn from them when we went and supported them and the idea of democracy in World War I? They turned around and they said that when you go back to the United States from France, be ready to return to the same conditions that you left, the same Jim Crow segregated oppressive conditions that you left. You're going to France and Flanders and fighting for democracy didn't mean anything to them. It never will mean anything to them. And so World War II was no different. And some of those men who fought bravely and who were heroes, you know how many decades it was before they even took the time to recognize or to honor them? There's a resistance on the part of the white man to recognize the achievements of the black man or the black woman. We just had this movie called Hidden Colors. I know a lot of you sisters saw it. But you know how long it was after it had happened? After they had gave their blood, sweat, and tears for NASA? And then it took all of this time before a movie, before anything was really said? That's what they do. They do it all the time. Whatever we do that's great and glorious, they hide it. Why? They hide the Amamarcus Mosiah Garvey from our people. They don't want him in the textbooks. They don't want him taught in the classroom. They don't want movies made about him. Why? Why don't they want us to know about the greatness of our people? Because they know that if we learn about the greatness of our people, we will want to be great. We will want to be like Marcus Garvey. We will want to be like Fele Te and Nate Sue. We will want to be like Harriet Tubman and the great women who came and laid their life on the line for their people. And so they don't want you to be great, so they can't teach you about the greatness of your race. So if they're not going to teach you, who's going to teach it? We must teach it. And so that is the challenge that we have. That is the solution. Teach your own. Teach your own. But you must know your own. You must learn about yourself. You must know yourself. And so that means we got to get in these libraries. We got to develop these home libraries where you got 1,000 books on various subjects. You need to have plenty of books in your home. I mean, Chuck, I got 100 right here I'm looking at about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. I got 200 or 300 that I'm looking at about Africa. I got hundreds about all kinds of levels of spirituality, and that's the way our homes have got to be, because then the children look at the parents' libraries and say, oh, you value books. I will value books, too. We have got to get to the point where books become important. I know there's other technology and ways that you can Google some stuff and so forth and so on, but it ain't nothing like having a book nearby that you can go and sit with your child and you flip through the pages of the books pointing out the important things that they need to know. So tomorrow we will be having a discussion about this queen, this late queen, and the role that the empire that she represented for over 70 years, what it has done and what we must think about it. Because you in the listening audience who are watching the television screens, you see what they're saying. Oh, she was honorable. Oh, she was great. She was wonderful. She was beautiful. That ugly cracker ain't beautiful, but they want you to look at it and be impressed by what they say, what they're teaching. This is their propaganda. And so you buy into it because you don't have an alternative. But here on this conference call, you are getting an alternative view that woman was not wonderful. She wasn't beautiful. She never was beautiful, because the only beauty that we see is in the black woman. She is the most beautiful woman in the world. So if they don't have the lips of the black woman, they ain't got it. They don't have the nose of the black woman. They don't have the hair of the black woman. They don't have the racial features and characteristics of a black woman, then they can't be called beautiful. They can be called women, but they can't be called beautiful woman, because our woman is the most beautiful woman in the world, and the most beautiful of all of our women is our mother, and our grandmothers, and our children must be taught that your mother is the most beautiful woman in the world, and her mother is the most beautiful woman in the world, and great-grandma was the most beautiful woman in the world, and one day, young sister, you're going to be the most beautiful woman. You're just a beautiful, pretty little girl right now, but one day you're going to be a beautiful woman, and there's going to be a handsome black man. I don't care what they think about Charles, Prince Charles, or King Charles, or whatever they want to call him. That ugly cracker is not going to be idolized by black women or black girls. Young sisters have to be taught that when you decide sometime in the future that you want to get married, marry somebody look like your father. Marry somebody look like your grandfather. Do not be looking out here to try to find somebody that look like, you know, an albino. The white man had a pointed nose and blue eyes. Blue eyes! First time I saw somebody with some blue eyes, it was like, wow, what kind of human being is this? But it was an ordinary white man. But I had never seen one, seen their eyes before. It was like ugly. Is this a monster or something? But anyway, I don't want to go too deep into that. I just want to simply say, she ain't all that they try to make her out to be. So get your mind out of that television that tells you that she needs to be honored. Flags need to be half staffed. What is that flag? The Union Jack or whatever needs to be jacked up. No, we've had enough of that. It caused our demise. It caused our enslavement. It caused our oppression. It caused the carving up of Mother Africa. We've had enough of the queen, and we've had enough of their kings. We've had enough of their monarchs, and we're not looking to get any more. So now it's time to do a reality check and say, we suffered under her, we suffered under them, and we're not going to suffer under them any longer, especially not voluntarily. Like, hey, I want to be oppressed. I want to be hoodwinked. I want to be bamboozled. No, we don't want to be tricked and fooled any longer. We are walking forward with the spirit of the Million Woman March. We're walking forward with the spirit of the Million Man March, and we're moving in the direction that we choose. And one day we will step on these other civilizations. We will look down upon these civilizations as you drive today and tomorrow down the highway or in your cities, and you look down at the city's tall buildings and skyscrapers and so forth. Here's what we must do. We must see them under our own. We must imagine that what we see in terms of white civilization is under our own, that ours will be grander, ours will be more glorious, that we will dig up, if necessary, the secrets that are still buried buried and hidden under the soil of Mother Africa, and we will create something that's never been created before. We will solve problems that have never been solved before. We will do the impossible because we are the brothers and sisters, the men and women of Mother Africa. They gave what? They gave science and literature and art and music to the world. They're only copying the things that we produce. They're only imitating the things that we have been able to accomplish. Well, once we know who we are, once we truly know who we are and the ability that we have given to us by the creator of the universe, we're getting ready to come back and take charge, because that's what they're trying to prevent us from doing, taking charge. The Honorable Marcus Garvey wanted us to take charge. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad wanted us to take charge. Our great leaders and teachers wanted us to take charge, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Thank you.
All right. All right, family, you just heard from Brother Shaka Barak, and this was one of our original brothers in support from 1997, and now we have a new cadre that we're raising up and bringing forward. We call them the Serious Brothers in Support, and that's not just S-E-R. I-O-U-S is I-R-I-U-S, as in what the Dogon people taught us. So, family, listen, we're going to open up the lines for you. If you have a question or a comment you want to share, or you want to ask Brother Shaka something, by all means, press 1 now, and we'll bring you in. And while we're waiting for that, I just want to do a little sidebar thing, which is, of course, with MWM25, we're now bringing forward our rites of passage for our little sisters and for our older sisters, too. And note, we are independent. So we're not looking for Coca-Cola and all these other people. We ain't looking for that. We don't do mentoring either. So you will not hear us talk about mentoring. We do sistering, okay? When you see our Black Print Agenda 25, you're going to know what the real mothers of the movement is about and what MWM has always been about, and now we're coming forward with the first global movement. The kickoff is coming October. And by the way, family, what we're getting ready to bring forward, again, is something for everyone. So it doesn't matter what your religion is, doesn't matter what your economic status is, what your educational status is. As in 97, it was all across the board. The only thing we're asking is that you be sort of, if not all the way, race first. We made that very clear in 97, and we've been consistent with that position. It is our people, the first family, first, the real first family, first. So we now say we're not only raising up the mother of civilization, we're raising up the mother of civilization universally. Tell you about that a little more before we close out. Okay, family, listen, again, if you have a question, comment, by all means, you can press 1, and we would certainly love to have you engage in this conversation. All right. So with that said, oh, Brother Shaka, I mean, you just hit some really powerful points. And, you know, I'm just hoping that our brothers are hearing what you're saying. I mean, I've heard brothers say some of these things over the years, but then when I kind of look at what they actually do, that becomes a big question. So let me just share this with everyone. There's a meeting coming up Monday night, particularly for Black men, for brothers, those who want to support the Million Women March for the anniversary, 25-year anniversary, as well as for the year long, because we're coming to different cities. So we need brothers in different cities. Those sessions that are coming to those cities are going to deal with issues. For example, gentrification, mass incarceration. Do y'all know that there's still some states where if a sister is incarcerated and going to have a baby, that she's going to be shackled? There's still some states to do that. We also had to look at the missing and kidnapped Black women and girls. And we also had to look at the miseducation of our people, of our children in particular. And what are we going to do about that? We have some answers to that, including starting in September, we're going to be opening our own Kujichagulia community schools. We'll be starting here in Philly. And for those who had master's degrees and bachelor's degrees and certificates of all sorts, they'll be able to contribute an hour a week, an hour a month for our own independent edification / education classes in our communities. This is what we'll be talking about for the upcoming A Million Black Women Rising Convention as a part of the MWM 25. So, again, if you're interested in the upcoming Zoom meeting on Monday, we'll definitely just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. The cadres are being formed. It's a year-long activity. For those who want to take the short-term route, that's fine. For those who want to take the long-term route, that's fine, too. Now, we're getting ready to go to our live line, and before I do that, I also want to make sure that people know our email address is nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, and I'm going to give you our Cash App before we close out as well. But let's go to our live line and bring in some of our family. Caller, you are at 7628. 7628, your line is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Jumbo.
Hey, C Jumbo.
How you doing?
All right.
I wanted to ask brother, did you ever hear about something called October African Holocaust Month?
Yes. Greetings, my brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Great. Is that something you support as well?
I'm still doing some research. I heard a reverend brother, I forgot his name, but I shared with Dr. Empress, she.
Well, you don't have to be limited to any month of the year. The African Holocaust is something that we ought to be aware of and talk about every day. Because to undo all the damage that has been done in terms of divide and conquer, the issues that Sister Fele Teyanesu just talked about in terms of the problems that exist in our community, it's got to be 24/7. You can't sleep. You can't stop. You can't rest. You have to stay on top of it. So if that date is not convenient for you, that month is not convenient for you, then you don't have to wait to get started to bring the information to the people. So that's what really must happen. It's not a celebration. It's bringing information to the people. If you're going to make a change in the community, you got to get up in the morning and go find the people. The people in the community waiting for somebody to come. In the UNIA's history, that's what we used to do. We used to get up in the morning and put the newspaper on the people's doors. So when they got up in the morning, the first thing that they saw was the newspaper under their door. And then when they stepped out the door, the first person they saw on the corner was the Universal African Legion. And so black men and women are going to have to take charge of their own destiny, which means go for it. Go out and talk to the people. You want to stop sisters from being kidnapped? The sisters scream every time they have a problem. We have to respond to every scream that we hear. Every time a sister shouts, we need to respond. What's up, sister? What's going on? Can I be of some help or some assistance to you? In other words, when people know that every time the sister screams, you're going to respond to her scream, they'll not want to approach her and harm her because they know somebody's going to respond in the next few minutes and come and take care of the business for her and her behalf. Sister Fele, let me leave my number for those who want to have other discussions, because we only got so much time on these airways. 312-391-8383. I'll repeat. My phone number is 312-391-8383. I hope that answered your question, my brother.
Yes. Can you repeat that number again?
Yes. 312-391-8383. 8383. And those who are listening who may not have an ink pen handy, you can always contact Dr. Empress Fele Teyanesu, and she will provide my number for you. 312 391-8383.
Ashe, yep, definitely will. And another little sidebar, two things. One, you know, one of the things that MWM is bringing forward is our national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of women and girls of African descent. Long title, we shortened it to EIE, Enough is Enough. One of the initiatives from that is to develop our own app and our own hotline so that once we get it up and running, that way sisters can utilize the app and the hotline. You see, so again, we're solution-oriented. We're not just going to talk about what the problems are. We're going to, again, for those sisters and brothers who want to be involved in these kinds of discussions and activities this coming October, from the 23rd through the 30th, we'll be doing sessions. Some of them are planning sessions for upcoming events. Some of them are information sessions. But the bottom line is about action. So these are some of the things you're going to hear us discuss as proposals or actual solutions. Lastly, with that said, now, Brother Yao, who is one of our brothers in support out of the D.C. area and Philly area, that's who was just talking with you, Brother Shaka. And again, we have some wonderful black men, you know, who we are very proud of and very honored to be able to build with over these, you know, over these past months and for a few years. It's a growth process. We're developing community and family structures in the form of operation with the intent. Now, I can say this now. I couldn't say it a few years ago, but I'm allowed to say it now based on my ancestral connection, and that is we're literally preparing to support independent nations that already exist or are striving to exist as well as create new ones.
Well, I'm honored to have met that brother then, and I'm glad he's working with the black men in support.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're encouraging our brothers because when we do the upcoming convention next month, one of the dialogues is going to be black women. We're going to invest. We're going to introduce some very lucrative and practical ways for black women to invest. And one of them is our own security agency, investigation and security agency. That will enable us to not only hire our people, including our brothers, but also provide training and have something that's substantial or stable in our communities on a national level. That's something that as black women, we can begin to do collectively. That is for our community. So these are some of the conversations that we're going to be having in October. These are some of the things we've been working on over the years. So family, y'all get ready, because what we bring to the table, y'all ain't seen that coming from no black women before, trust me. Anyway, we're going to close out. Thank you, Baba Yao. And by the way, tomorrow, family, we were supposed to do our second DEE Ace Flea Market, and it was also going to be the Black Farmers Market, canceling it. It is projected to rain all day here in Philly tomorrow, so we are going to cancel that, and we'll definitely keep you posted on the next date. But we will be resuming it. But unfortunately, the weather tomorrow is forecast to be raining all day and relatively hard. So we'll keep you posted on that. Okay, we're going to get ready to close out. And again, I want to remind everyone that September 12th will mark the assassination of Stephen Biko. We're going to close out with Stephen Biko tonight because we will never forget the Black Consciousness Movement of Stephen Biko and all that he brought and gave for liberation. And note, it wasn't just about anti-apartheid. And that's why we make clear that you all know he called it Black Consciousness for a reason. Anyway, we'll go into that a little later on. Let's go back to Baba Shaka and get his closing comments, and then we're going to close out this segment of New Day. Baba, you got it.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be on with you, Empress Chi, and talking to your audience about these issues of Queen Elizabeth II, Ava Mohammed, who was a greater queen than Queen Elizabeth could ever dream of being. And then Prince Adiel, who was a greater prince than Prince Charles could ever dream of. And so, and you are the Empress, the greatest of them all. Thank you very much, and peace and love.
And thank you, Brother Shaka Barak. Marcus Garvey Institute in the house, yes. Brother Shaka, we got to bring you back soon because I really want to also get a brief report on this year's, you know, August is always the time period that the UNIAACL commemorates the Earth Day of the Honorable Marcus Garvey. So we have to bring you back soon and, you know, get some updates or some insight into what happened this year, okay?
All right.
Great, great. Family,
much.
We're going to close this. Thank you. We're going to close this session out. We want to just remind you that October the 30th, we'll be doing our first natural hair, skin, and personal body care expo. If you or you know someone that makes their own products for hair, skin, body, they need to contact us because we're putting together a collective of manufacturers and product producers. We want to make sure, as we talk about doing business, that we focus right now on those who are making their own items. For right now, we're going to start with natural body care, hair care, skin. That'll also go later into other things that are being manufactured, jewelry, clothing, whatever. But we're starting with, right now, hair, skin, personal body care. So, again, we'll give you more information about that next week. Joining us for that session is going to be Dr. George Love. He's going to do a full-day training session, information and training session. This will be the prelude for those who are going to be joining on with MWM for our certification classes in natural, holistic, and healing and health and healing certification. And note, Dr. George Love is a student of Dr. Matula Shakur. So when you heard earlier how Brother Shep talked about Dr. Matula Shakur being really the one, we only know of him being as the first black acupuncturist who literally formulated the Black Acupuncture Society and has hundreds of students still doing the work today. In D.C., of course, Baba Yaga, you know you have Brother Kokai there. We have Dr. George Love, who really lives in Florida, but he's really from Philly. Again, he's going to be joining us doing a full-day session for those who are interested in Qigong, training, et cetera, but it's also the first phase for those who want to get certified with MWM's new natural holistic, black holistic health and healing collective. So we'll tell you more about that next week. Okay, we're going to close out. Was one other thing I wanted to mention to everyone that Brother Shaka mentioned. Oh, I know, October. Brother Shaka is on point with, you know, we don't need to wait for holidays. However, one thing that Brother Baba Battle, Brother Shaka, made it very clear to me, because that was my elder. Of course, he was the president general for the UNIA. He made it very clear to me to institutionalize my work. And so this year for the 25-year anniversary, one of the sessions or two of the sessions that we're going to hold is the campaign for there to be a national holiday for a black woman, okay? And, yes, we don't need to, you know, we don't need somebody to tell us that, but we do need to institutionalize some of our work so that it's synchronized, so that it can be taught and transmitted in a manner that is going to be effective and that can have a maintenance. So we'll be talking about that at the upcoming convention, and also we'll be introducing our 25 sister saints, but also we're going to look there being a National Black Women's Appreciation and Awareness Month. We'll be voting on those two things at this upcoming convention. If you are not a member of MWM, you will not be able to vote. So I strongly suggest you hook up with us and get that voting right. NationalMWM at AOL.com. Again, NationalMWM at AOL.com, and we will get information to you. All right, we're going to close this session out. I want to thank everyone again for sharing, and we look to hear black from you next week. And you know what we say right now, Brother Shaka, we're going to leave them as we oftentimes greet our family, and that is in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, there can never be any real peace, meaning Hotep, until there's truly not just justice, but Ma'atic justice representing truth, justice, balance, reciprocity, honor, law, righteousness, and order. That's what we're talking about for justice. And we say, Brother Shaka, if there's no justice, though, there's no what?
Peace.
No peace. All right. Promote you to the Shinda family. Together, we not only shall win, we going to win in a way that they ain't even thought of yet. Till next time, later. And we're going to close out with the great story and information on Stephen Biko. Peace out.
And this man was a terrorist or a man of peace or a man of truth. Steve Biko said, no race possesses the monopoly of beauty, intelligence, force, and there is room for all of us at the rendezvous of victory.
Oh, Biko, 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 Biko.
He was just young enough to be acknowledged as the leader of the youth and just mature enough to be able to do so wisely.
We see a completely non-racial society. We don't believe, for instance, in the so-called guarantee for minority rights. Because guaranteeing minority rights implies the recognition of portions of the community on a race basis. We believe that in our country there shall be no minority, there shall be no majority interested people. And those people will have the same status before the law, and they will have the same political rights before the law. So in a sense, it will be a completely non-racial egalitarian society.
There are the vast number of blacks after all their experiences, yeah, being able to live their life without giving vent to feelings of revenge, of...
We believe it is the duty of the vanguard political movement which brings about change to educate people's outlooks. I mean, in the same way that blacks have never lived in a socialist economic system, they're going to live to learn to live in one. In the same way that they've always lived in a racially divided society, they're going to learn to live in a non-racial society. There were many things to learn, and all these must be brought to them and explained to the people by the vanguard movement, which is leading the revolution.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.